This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Pressed by Torres, the set, the kick, and the pitch. It's deep to left field. This one may be off the wall, maybe in the screen.
Lang and Chernyshev on top as expected. They're eligible for Salt Lake City.
There it is.
Okay, Bill Black here with the Indian All-Stars podcast. It's my distinct honor to speak with Tetan Saltis, offensive tackle for the Arlington Renegades of the XFL, newly crowned XFL champions. Woo! And thanks again for taking the time. I really appreciate it, Tetan.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, great. So I have a few questions about football stuff, but first of all, can you give people a little bit of idea of your background? I could give kind of a cursory introduction, but it would be bad, so let you go ahead and do it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I suck at introducing myself, too. Yeah, so, you know, I was born and raised on the Pioneer Indian Reservation here in South Dakota. You know, grew up, my father's Black, my mother's Native American. And so that, you know, gave me a very unique perspective on the world and how I grew up. And, you know, I came from a great family. I didn't come from a family of, you know, a lot of money or anything like that, but I came from a very educated family that pushed being the best version of yourself in everything that you do. You know, whether that's football, whether that's, you know, school, whether that's just life in general, being the best version of yourself. And so, you know, I always took that with me. And, you know, we moved around when I was younger, left the reservation. I think I was in seventh grade, I believe. Moved around, we went to Arizona, me and my mother and my brother, and then moved to Albuquerque eventually to finish high school. But, you know, in between all that, there's tons of ups and downs, but it was an amazing journey, and it was fun. It was beautiful. It was, you know, me and my mother, and my brother for a while until we met my stepfather in Arizona. And, you know, trying to skip over some, it's like a long story. It could be here all day, but overall, you know, growing up, like I said, I didn't come from a family necessarily with a lot, monetary wise. But I came from a family that valued, like I said, being the best version of yourself, and valued the morals that they gave us to help people, to fight for others, and ultimately leave your mark on the world. And so I've always tried to do that and everything that I've done and through sports and through, you know, speaking to people and trying to, you know, live life in a good way, an honorable way. So, you know, the journey's just beginning, despite, you know, where I'm at, the long-term journey. Right. But,
yeah,
it's been amazing so far, to say the least.
Okay. That's great. So you're working hard, professional football stuff. I was reading a little bit. You didn't start playing football till middle of high school, right?
Yeah, my junior year of high school.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's funny. I grew up like any other res kid, right? I grew up, you know, basketball was it, you know. Yeah. I thought I was going to be in the NBA and I was going to be 6'10 and dunking on people. And yeah. Obviously, it didn't happen that way. But, but you know, going into my junior year of high school, well, I guess starting from freshman year of high school, the football coaches there in Albuquerque at Valley High School, you know, they saw me as a freshman. I was 6'4 freshman. They're like, hey, you're pretty big, man. You want to come play football? I'm like, no, I'm a hooper. I'm good. And they're like, we'll get you a scholarship. We'll get you this. We'll do that. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. And finally, it took to my junior year of high school where I got bored waiting for basketball season to come around. And so I thought, you know what, let me try it out. You know, I might be good at it. I'll have some fun. I'll, you know, get in shape, whatever the case may be. And I go out, and I was actually a defensive end. So I played defense in high school. And, you know, first game, didn't know what I was doing. Got like 3 sacks and blocked a field goal and all kinds of stuff. And didn't even know what the heck I was doing, you know, running around out there.
Yeah.
And it turns out I was pretty good at it. So
yeah, right on.
I was like, you know what, I'll be stupid not to stick with this. And,
yeah.
You know, got a phone call one day from San Diego State, another one from Washington and Oregon. It just kind of spiraled from there. But it's definitely an interesting journey getting into football, you know.
Yeah. Well, Washington, you passed on my Huskies. I'm wearing my
– I did.
I'm
did.
Wearing my Sonny Six Color shirt right now.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
So, dang. All right. Well, we'll forgive you for that. But
thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So how was that process for you? I mean, my son went through a bit of recruiting stuff too, but tell me about your recruiting journey and how you ended up picking the college that you picked.
Yeah. So, you know, I started getting recruited in my junior year. I think I had like 5 or 6 offers. And then my senior year, that's when they all started really hitting. I think I had like 15 or 17, you know, overall offers, and majority of them were all Power 5 schools.
Wow.
And, but again, going back to, you know, my journey in football, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And so, you know, I always tell this story, but I remember, so I went to the University of New Mexico, but when I was going into my sophomore year of college, I remember asking my coach, and I was like, hey, coach, what's the difference between a linebacker and a DB? And he looks at me all funny, like, what? What do you mean? My freshman year, I didn't know the difference between a tackle and a guard. Right. And this is college we're talking about here.
Wow.
And so I didn't know what the heck I was doing. But again, going back to my journey, I didn't know what I was doing. And so I didn't want to go to a Power 5. I had Oklahoma offers and, like I said, Washington and all these big schools. And I knew I was a dime a dozen at those schools, right? Like, they can find plenty of me, of guys like myself who've played the game throughout their whole lives. So they understand it. They knew it. Me, I wanted to go to a place where I knew they were going to really take the time to teach me the game of football and to really develop me rather than tossing me to the side and getting a better player, right? And so
sure.
I really wanted to just focus on learning the game of football. And not only that, but, you know, going back to Albuquerque, one, I went to high school there. I finished high school there, so I knew, you know, knew the town. And there's a huge Native American population in Albuquerque. And I thought, you know what, it'd be perfect for me to stay here. To go in and build my name in this community, to do good things, to, you know, bring a winning attitude to the program and ultimately do really good stuff, not just in that community, but throughout many communities and throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
That was always the big goal, was to help as many people as I can. And
sure.
University of Mexico had a master's of law program that I went to go into. So that was really kind of the cherry on top for me going to the University of Mexico. So committed there and 4-year starter and did well. There. So it was very fun. Absolutely. Definitely a blessing.
That's cool. And just goes to show it can happen, right? I mean, that's, you didn't even know the game that you were playing that they were going to give you money to go to college to play, right? You didn't.
Right.
How cool is that?
It's awesome, man. Sometimes I sit back and I think about the story and I'm like, man, it's very unlikely for any of this to happen.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that it did happen. And so it's a blessing. I keep saying that, but it truly is. It's a blessing, man, because there's so many people that want an opportunity. So many people that want to do something better in life and they don't always get that opportunity. And for myself, I've been given that opportunity to do really good stuff and to help a lot of people and to do some pretty cool stuff out there and play football and to have fun. So despite the ups and downs that come with the game, the whole journey is awesome, man.
I commend you for that. I also commend you for being brave enough to take that step. Because big step. I mean, in the end, you didn't really go that far away, right? You picked a college that was kind of familiar, but
sure.
Still taking that step and going to the next level. It's a big deal, big thing, and
it is. Yeah.
There are a lot of kids that I see, some kids that my son grew up with and played with who have some ability and stuff, but were afraid to take that next step, and that's something that I always try and instill in kids is don't be afraid. Go see the big wide world. Take a chance. And
yeah, absolutely. A lot of people back home have always asked me, you know, like, how did you do it? Why did you do it? Because like you said, it is that step. It's a leap of faith. It's, mm-hmm. it's believing in yourself, you know, and for myself, it was, like a lot of people ask me, were you scared? Were you afraid? Or how are you not afraid to do this? And of course I'm afraid of stuff. I get nervous. I get anxious when I go out and do these things, but that's okay. It's part of the process. It's part of life.
Yes.
To be nervous, to be anxious. It's part of it, but you can't let that stop you because you have to understand. And I learned this. The only way that you can get to the place that you need to be is to go through the tough stuff. It's to go directly to it, not to go around the difficulties, not to go under it, not to go over it, but to go through it. You have to address things face on or else it's an obstacle in your way. And you have to move the obstacle or else it'll be there.
Yes.
And, you know, there's no easy way through it, but it's really the only way through it is to go face first, head on, full of steam. And conquer it.
Yep. Exactly. That's
yeah.
So again, kudos to you for doing that. Tell me about the Werfel Award. That sounds like a cool thing. I checked into it a little bit, but I want to hear your perspective and what it meant to you and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So the Werfel Trophy is college football's premier award for community service, academic achievement, and athletic ability. So, you know, what you do on the field.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the NFL's Man of the Year award for college. Okay. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to receive that award. I was a recipient of that award for, you know, did well in school, did well on the field, and very big on community service and helping and uplifting, empowering people. And I was very fortunate to receive that honor. And what was important about it was not the personal accolade of getting the trophy and doing the interviews and the pick. That's not important to me. What was important was the work that I do and that my family does in this community and many other communities. The work received notoriety. The work received it received the attention that it needed, that so desperately needed. And the people involved in that work received, you know, the notoriety that comes with that award. And, you know, it's always about the work that we do. It's always about uplifting people, helping people in any way that we can do that. And so that award, you know, gave us more resources and allowed us to expand our scope of, you know, what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve. And so the award was special. It was awesome. It was, you know, it's not something that I necessarily went out and I wasn't trying to get the award. You know, sure. I wasn't working towards getting the award. It was just given based off of the work that we do. But to see the work, way. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. To see it coming to fruition like that was a special thing for me, but more special for my family, because, you know, without my family and without that supporting group that I have, you know, I'm nothing. I'm nobody. That's the truth. So it's awesome, man. It really is.
So tell me a little bit about that work. What kind of stuff were you doing in the community, or you still are? I mean, I know that
right.
you're kind of active and if I say opinionated, it's in a positive way.
I'm definitely opinionated.
about tribal politics and tribal government and that kind of stuff, and that's cool. We need more people with a head on their shoulders that can talk about that kind of stuff. But
sure.
what other kinds of work were you and your family involved in, or still are, I guess?
Yeah, so we're still very actively involved in a lot of the work that we do, and most of it initially started on the reservation here because, you know, it arose out of a need for the work, and a lot of it's suicide prevention, life awareness, literacy skills.
Mm-hmm.
So like we started a program called the Bear Project, which stands for Be Excited About Reading.
Excellent.
And initially that program was solely literacy, was youth development, working with kids to build skills that they can use off the reservation, and, you know, teaching them how to, you know, and interact with people and just giving them life skills, right? And around 2008 or so, a big suicide epidemic hit the reservation. Mm-hmm. That's when our work kind of, I won't say switched, but we added an additional, I guess, branch to it, which was the suicide prevention. And, you know, me and my grandmother and my mom and all of us, we're giving trainings. We're training people how to deal with suicide prevention and awareness. And, we're out in the community and we're helping people with events. The main bulk of our work with that stuff is not, it's not pretty. It's not glamorous, right? We're out 2 a.m. and, you know, cutting somebody off of a tree that hung themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's hard work, and it's work that we wish we didn't have to do the work. You know, we wish we didn't have to do that.
Right.
I wish I didn't have to, go out and talk about this stuff. But if we don't do the work, nobody else will. Over here, and that's unfortunate. And so we need a lot more people to get involved and to really care about that stuff. But we did a lot of work throughout COVID, and we were, you know, in direct patient care and transporting people who had COVID. We're handing out food. We're handing out house supplies and anything that anybody needed.
Sure.
Not just during COVID, but in general. You know, we give out clothes. There's a ton of stuff. Like, my mind's just kind of flowing on all the things that we do with our program. And, if people want to learn more about a lot of the work that we do, go to bearproject.net. And on there, it has everything that we do. And then, of course, myself, I'm very active with the political system, politics. And so getting people out and engaged in the system and teaching people how to use their voice to advocate for the things that they want, the things that they need. And to give people a sense of, or to help people find a sense of purpose and direction in their life. And so, I know it's very vague, but but it's important work for us. And you know, whether I was playing in the professional football and well-known, or whether I was just, you know, working a regular job, we would still be doing this work, whether there's cameras or whatever the case may be, because it's the work that's important. It's not us, it's the work, so.
Okay. Well, What was the website? Bearproject.org?
Bearproject.net.
.net.
Bearproject.net.
.net. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
I will share that when we post this, just to give people a little bit more access to it. So,
sure.
Great. That all of that stuff is really, really powerful work, and more power to you guys for taking that on and being a leading force in that. Good job.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
So now let's talk football.
Yeah.
So get through college, and you went and visited the Jets.
Yep.
There for a bit, and I mean, that's a whole big numbers game thing. I want to get your perspective on that experience a little bit. But then I also want to talk about a couple of subjects near and dear to my heart, the USFL and XFL, because I think that's
sure.
stuff. But tell me about your experience with going to the Jets and that whole scene.
Right. It was I signed with the New York Jets as an undrafted free agent, a priority undrafted free agent. Was there for about 6 months and doing really well, doing well in training camp. And I tear my MCL the last play of our scrimmage going into the preseason.
Oh no.
And so I was looking very good to I don't know if I would have got made the final roster or not, but I definitely would have been on at least a practice squad, whatever the case may be. And injuries happen. You know, I mean, it's
sure,
that's NFL. A lot of us say the NFL stands for, you know, not for long, because you know, the injury rate's almost 100% there. And so, you know, I had a choice to make. I had to pull my knee out. Was my career over? Am I going to go back and just, you know, start working in government or politics, whatever the case may be? Am I done? And I was very close to hanging up the cleats. You know, I thought to myself, I wanted to show that I can make it to the NFL, and I made it to the NFL, and I did what I said I was going to do, but it didn't sit right. Couldn't do it. I couldn't stop. I can't quit is not something that's within me.
Mm-hmm.
And I told myself, we have an opportunity to show what it's like to come back through adversity, especially for back home,
mm-hmm.
to show the kids that, yeah, life happens, man. Things don't go the way it's planned, but it's not about how you planned it, right? It's about making it through life and understanding that it's about how you respond to what life throws at you. Life is gonna screw us all up, man. It has its ups and downs, and nobody's life goes the way it planned, no matter how well you want it to. Okay, so what?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to lay down? Are you going to allow life to just run all over you? Are you going to stand up? Are you going to fight? And are you going to make sure that you're doing the best, or you're doing the most that you can to put yourself in the best possible position to succeed? And so with, you know, injured myself in the NFL and started rehabbing, and I started really grinding, and I started to work on my weaknesses and the things that, you know, I really needed to build, and started working with Duke Manyweather, who was an offensive line, guru, he's a developer, and
mm-hmm.
really started honing my craft and became a very, very good football player on the offensive line through my hard work and obviously continuing to build on that, and jumped into the USFL and did really well there, but I didn't get a shot back in the league, so I kept continuing to work.
Mm-hmm.
Got in the XFL recently. And I was their overall draft pick for supplemental draft, because I was still on contract with the USFL, and was slated to come in and start and do this and that, and injuries again. And so, and it wasn't bad ones. I, you know, partially tore my calf, both of them, but it's a 10-week season, so right. Not a lot of time there.
The rehab doesn't happen that quick, yeah.
Exactly. But again, it's about adversity, and it's about overcoming adversity. It's about, it's not about football at this point. Football, I love football. It's amazing sport. It's an amazing game. But everything I do, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than football. It's bigger than me.
Yeah.
It's about everybody else out there. It's about those who I'm trying to fight for. It's about those who I want to show there's a better way to do things. if you just believe in yourself, if you have the discipline, the accountability, and the consistency to get it, to see it through, then you can go so far. And the only person that can stop you at that point is yourself. You are your worst enemy at that point. And so that's what my story, that's what I wanted to show people, is you can make it if you just believe, if you take that step. Whether you're scared or not, you have to take the step. You have to take that leap of faith to make something of your life, or else you'll never know what your potential is. So I know I'm ranting a little bit there, but
no.
Yeah, it's been a great journey with the NFL and the ups and downs of the perspective that I've gained, the friends that I've made, the experience that I have. And, you know, I'm grateful for it all. It would be nice if I was a first round draft pick, right? But the things that I've learned and about myself and about others, and the tools and the perspective that I've gained from this journey so far, it's special to say the least. So I'm glad that I went through it to gain what I have now.
Sure.
So we're still going.
What's that?
I said we're still going. We ain't done yet.
Still going, yeah. So you went to the offensive line summit thing. Thanks for cluing me in on that, because I hadn't heard of it. That's really what a cool event.
It started in Lane Johnson, the right tackle for the Eagles, you know, all pro, future Hall of Famer. He partnered with Duke Manyweather, who I talked about earlier.
Right.
It's kind of like the premier O-line developer for the NFL. And they got together and said, you know, man, these D linemen in the NFL are getting pretty good, man. We got to find a way to stop them. And so they wanted to pull together all of the best offensive linemen in the NFL, put them into one room and just kind of talk ball and strategy and whatnot. And this kind of grew to – initially it was more so game planning for other guys, and now it's grown to hundreds of players in there, NFL players, collegiate players that are getting ready to go into the NFL, and coaches, and it's a whole, like, offensive line it's all about offensive line development and elevating the position and making the position something special. And so it turned into a really, really awesome event. There's about 6 or 7 Hall of Fame NFL linemen that were there to give their perspective and to teach us, you know, tricks and, you know, work on, you know, just give us, you know, what they know and pick their brains. And so it was a 2-day event, and it was awesome, man. So they do a great job, and I've learned a ton going there from the past, you know, 2 or 3 years that I've been there. So it's, if you're an offensive lineman, man, and you want to be the best, that's an event you definitely want to go to, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right. So as you're growing up, or, you know, even now, do you have somebody that you looked up to? Do you have, and it could be in sports, it could be in life, it could be whatever, it could be somebody from, I don't know. Did you have I don't want to say an idol, because that's not really what I'm shooting for, but do you have somebody that you wanted to model yourself after, somebody that you know, I want to be like that guy?
For myself, I mean, sure, there's guys that growing up that, you know, you want to, that you look up to in sports, right?
And you all can't be Michael Jordan, so that doesn't count.
Right. Yeah, I want to be Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, and it didn't pan out very good. But, you know, growing up for myself, I wanted to be like, I valued people who were courageous. I valued people who had a high set of morals and standards that they lived by, that they died by. So it wasn't really sports people. You know, growing up, I really wasn't even a big sports guy. My brother, my older brother, he played Division I basketball, and he was the big sports guy. He can name off everything. And I was, you know, I played music and I played with robots, and I was one of those kids, right? Like, yeah. I wasn't even that competitive. And so like I looked up to people like Malcolm X, and I looked up to like different philosophers and historians and scientists, people like that. And Crazy Horse, for example, one of our warriors, right? Yeah. Or one of our greatest leaders. You know, I looked up to people like that. But really, I didn't want to be like them. I admired them. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily want to be that. But I did want to be like, you know, like my mother, like my father, like my grandfather. You know, the strongest man that I know is my grandfather. And, you know, he was fought in Vietnam and educator and strongest man I know, but very compassionate. Sure. And loves people and will do anything for people. But he's not a man to be walked over, right? And so he's a very important man to me and my foundation and how I grew up. And he showed me the man that I want to be, that I want to become, you know, competent and tough, but somebody who you can talk to, somebody who you can go to and they'll help you. And, you know, they'll give you the shirt off their back. And that's my grandfather right there. And so for me, that's who I want to be. I want to be just like my grandpa growing up and, cool. And you know, obviously my father and all of them.
Right. Okay. So kind of following up on that a little bit, just getting to know you a little bit and what drives you and you know, what has helped you achieve what you have so far in life. Do you have like a life motto or a go-to saying or something that you hold on to and try and implement in your life? I have one. Some people do, some people don't. I'm just curious to find out if you happen to.
I do. I have a couple that I pull out regularly to remind myself about a lot of things. So, like I said, when the going gets tough for myself and, you know, the phone ain't ringing for teams and whatnot, I remind myself that the ones that made it, the ones that are successful, the difference between those and the ones that didn't make it is the ones that are successful never gave up, never quit,
yeah,
kept going. And the other one is in our own language, our Lakota language, is Nake Nula Waunfalo, which is anytime, anywhere, I am prepared.
Excellent.
And that's a life motto of myself. Whatever the situation, whatever I'm going into, I will ensure that I'm prepared and ready to take it on full speed, full steam.
This is going to sound silly, but that gave me goosebumps a little bit. I love that. That's awesome. No, for real.
Love it. Yeah. It's a powerful saying.
Oh, really, yeah. Is. Yep. Okay, we're getting short on time here. So let's see. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you wish I would have? Not that I asked you a whole lot of questions, but.
I'm sure there is. My football brain's not let me think of it, but
you got a funny story from anything related to your life, whether it's football or something when you were a kid, or just a funny story, a funny Teton story that we should know about, or maybe that you don't want to tell, but we should know.
Oh Lord, let me see. So all my funny stories are. They're probably for off camera. All the locker room stories.
I'll call you later on that.
No, you know, I can't think of. There's so many funny stories, so many great stories that I've had, yeah, in every single locker room that I've been in. You know, sure. College, pro, high school. I will say this, and especially to the young people watching, you know, enjoy it. Enjoy that time you have with your teammates. Enjoy, yeah, being in the locker room or the meetings or working out. Because that time's fleeting. You never know. You know, football is a very tough game. But, you know, sports in general, most people are not going to make it to the professional level. You know, mm-hmm. I've been fortunate. But even myself, you know, it's tough to get in to get in and stay up in that level. You know, 99% of athletes are not going to make it that to the, yeah, professional level. And that's just an unfortunate statistic, but it's reality. And so enjoy it. Have fun. Work as hard as you possibly can. Go as far as you can go. If you can go to the pro level, you better get your butt up there. You better go.
Right.
But have fun, because at any moment, it can be over. And that's life. That's not just sports. That's life. Any moment, either ourselves or a loved one, can, you never know what can happen. And so always be present. Always be there with each other. Have compassion for one another. Love one another. And make sure you do what's right. You know, but enjoy it. Enjoy the process. Mm-hmm. Have fun. You know, work hard, but it's a blessing. And never forget that. Never forget the blessing that the Creator has given you to not only live, but to do the things that you love to do and to be a part of this with other people. So don't take it for granted. You know, have fun, people, and live your life to the fullest. Be the best version of yourself you can be and go at it 100%.
I couldn't think of a better way to sum this all up. That's awesome. Great work.
Absolutely, man.
And again, thanks for taking the time. I know we had a little bit of a challenge hooking up, and I appreciate you sticking in with it. And I look forward to checking in with you down the road after Arlington wins the second round.
Get a second ring. Yeah. I'll send you one if we get another one.
All right, man. Thanks again. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
You as well, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.